Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we are looking up rather than down in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, on last week's show, I demanded 6 points from the week's fixtures, and amazingly, we got them. First, last Sunday, we got the home monkey off our backs by beating Spurs at the Amex before Wednesday night's win at the Champions Liverpool lifted us 10 points above the drop zone. The beer has certainly tasted a little bit sweeter this week, hasn't it? But the bandwagon rolls on and it's another busy week. And first, we travel to Burnley today and then we get a dose of cup fever as we head to Leicester on Wednesday. In other news, the transfer window closed on Monday and we finally got the signing of young Ecuadorian starlet Moises Caicedo over the line. But then all eyes were on the exit door, but only Max Sanders left to join Lincoln. But we did say a permanent goodbye to Glenn Murray, who inked a deal to join Chris Hughton, Anthony Knockhart and Gaetan Bong at Forest. Joining me today as we bask in the glory of a great week is, of course, Alan Wares. And we're delighted to welcome another Raw virgin in the shape of Albion commentator Steve Baker. Welcome to the Raw, Steve. It's lovely to see you. You're a voice that is going to be familiar to many people, but it's the first time we've seen your face.
Just me.
Well, what a lovely introduction. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Face for radio and all that.
Absolutely. Well, I mean,
you're putting me in out of shame here. I mean, like, you know.
Oh, he's a terribly good looking chap.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's very kind of you to say. I mean, I think I look an absolute mess. You know, I've given up in the pandemic. I got described as looking like I'm in a failed indie band. My hair's not normally this long. And someone had to.
I can see that.
Someone had to put failed in front of it. Why failed?
Well, what indie band
were you in? Was it St. Etienne? Was it?
I'm thinking all the Stone Roses, or maybe even the Charlatans.
Charlatans was the one. Was the one that was mentioned actually. But I was like, they're not a failed indie band,
not really.
It's kind of the front. It's a very different haircut to the one I usually sport. It's very much the pandemic cut.
Shall I say what it puts me in mind of? One is a very sort of, there is a very mod cut to it, which sort of those Manchester bands really adhered to. But two. Mm-hmm. The fact is that Steve's dark-haired and Graham Potter is blonde-haired, but it's an overgrown Graham Potter haircut, isn't it?
That's it. That's kind of what I'm going for. To be honest. Next, I'll be wearing the puffer jacket, the beige scarf. You know, yep. He's got a new look on the sideline, hasn't he, Graham Potter?
Absolutely, I might mimic that.
Well, you know, Gareth Southgate got a range at Marks and Spencer's after the World Cup. So, you know, you never know.
You go back to Ben Sherman. Ben Sherman opened their first shop in Brighton. You never know. Go back to them and see what you can get. Steve, welcome to the Albion Roar. Tell us about your... Now, I know it's not a completely Albion supporting history, but tell us about your background and how you got from birth to here.
From birth to here? Wow. Okay, so born in Hastings, 1983. Uh-huh. So grew up in Hastings, went off to uni, kind of classic sort of childhood, all fine, college, uni and all that. Then when I left university, I moved to Brighton because it's better than Hastings. And I didn't know what I wanted to do with myself. I'm going to confess, I'm actually a Manchester City fan by trade, and that is from my old man. So no connection to Manchester other than he went to Manchester Polytechnic Uni in the late 60s, early 70s, when Man City were phenomenally successful with Bell, Lee, Summerby. So he got me into that, took me to games. But then I moved to Brighton and I thought, what do I want to do? What do I want to do with myself? And I love football. I love talking. I was the kid in the playground that used to commentate as I played. So I was the weird kid that everyone else took the mick out of.
Baker else on the wing, crosses it. Oh, this is looking good.
That's exactly what I used to do, kicking a tennis ball around primary school. It baffles me to think how weird it would have been to other kids who just wanted to play football. But I got into Brighton and commentating at Brighton through a project called Soccer Site. Mm-hmm. So it was commentary for the blind the visually impaired.
Yeah.
I emailed someone that I'd found online and
No, I mean, that is something which it's quite niche, isn't it? I mean, it's something which I first came across it. I was covering a game Arsenal and I was up in the press box up there, and I saw the guys doing it for the blind people there. I mean, it's a very, very special skill to do that, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's like it's ultra descriptive ultimately. So it's really trying to paint the picture of the game, and I it kind of blew my mind when I first started doing it, because I had the normal reaction, which is, why is someone who's blind or visually impaired, and it's a common reaction, why would they go to the game if they can't see anything? Well, of course, there's a whole range of visual impairments. So it doesn't mean, you know, it might mean that you can see shapes but not the colors. It might mean that you can, you know, see things but not in full detail. So yeah, bringing it to life in an ultra descriptive way, it's a real skill that took me a long time to learn. But I started in 2006, back in the Widdean days. So I've kind of got better at it, I think, and then started on My Albion TV as a freelancer for the Albion when they got to the Premier League. So I sort of made the step up and now do the TV commentary.
Oh, yeah, mate, because for a long time it was Tim Humphries and Bob Booker. Bob Booker with his completely new inventive use of English language, and I think in creating more words in the English vocabulary than even Shakespeare might have done. But so was that the kind of the gig that you took over?
That's it. Yeah, that's it. So I the season before we got to the Premier League, the promotion season, do you remember I'm sure you do, the draw at Brentford, the amazing three-all draw away at Brentford?
Yeah, I remember it very well.
So I got the call to do that, because I was doing the commentary for the visually impaired, and then I got called by the club to ask, I don't think Tim Humphrey could do it that game. So I got called, went up to Brentford and did it alongside Bob Booker, you know, in the classic old Griffin Park with the scaffolding. Right above the pitch.
We were in the press box that day, actually. I mean, that it is that there's more leg room than nowhere. It is the tightest. I mean,
can you imagine a giant getting into a kiddie's toy car? That's how much leg room you've got.
You've got your knees up your nose.
It's amazing that you can actually sort of see the buttons that you need to press to commentate, or let alone get the air into your lungs to commentate. Yeah. It was a funny old day, wasn't it?
It was genuinely one of my favourite Albion games, because it was the first time I did it, you know, the sort of the TV commentary. It was a big game. It was an exciting game. And the goal at the end, and I remember my commentary well, because I got super excited about it. But Bob Booker actually sort of threw him. He got so excited, and we're in the scaffolding. I thought I was going to go over the scaffolding, because he kind of grabbed me in excitement. And I thought we were just both going to pile over the edge. But yeah, amazing game. I don't know. I still don't know how they got away with a draw from that one, because they were battered. They got battered
2-0 down, and then I can't remember if we got to 2-1 or if it was.
I think we actually took the lead. I think.
No. We were 2-0 down. We never took the lead at any point during that game, and then we had a penalty that Stockdale saved. No, we were 2-0 at half time.
Yes, you're right. That was a turning point. I remember Solly scored an absolutely wonderful goal in that game, and that Tony Bloom was in the away end that day as well.
Thinking, actually, that as much as we're talking about lack of legroom, I got a feeling when you say you're on scaffolding, does that mean you were on the roof above where the camera was? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Right, so he's on the opposite side of the ground to us, AD. So we're moaning about legroom. He's worried about falling off a roof 30 feet up.
I did have the legroom, so it's actually way more spacious up there, just a little bit
more terrifying.
But you know what, Al? I mean, what that reminds me of, because you don't see it very often these days. Do you remember those days when you used to wander up to the Goldstone or whatever ground we were playing at, and you used to see the TV gantry up on put up, and that was the only time you ever knew that the game was actually going to be on the telly that night. It was
well, to be fair, I mean, yes, I mean, the football grounds back in those days were not designed for television, because there was no television. But yeah, it was so a lot of them did have, I mean, a lot of clubs did have to either build a new stand or build something. I mean, at Wembley Stadium had it in the roof. It was bizarre. So yeah, Brentford, which, you know, it's a pity that we didn't get to play Brentford in the next round of the cup, because I've actually applied for a press pass to have gone, and you know, it was a new ground to have ticked off.
But But yeah, but I mean, there was, I don't know if you remember that, I mean, some people probably will, there was a brilliant thing on Football Focus many years and years ago of John Motson climbing up these rickety old ladders to get up to the TV gantry.
I imagine most grounds,
you know, it would definitely would not have passed any sort of health and safety thing these days, but it was, you know.
Yeah, that's like John Noakes climbing up, what's it, Nelson's Column.
Yeah.
So,
it's still the same at where was it? I went Crawley for a pre-season game. Was it Crawley? It was Crawley, and like you kind of have to effectively wedge a ladder against one of the stairs, the concrete stairs on the, you know, the actual stand.
Yes, you do.
And then pack up with the camera, with the, you know, all the commentary equipment, and it is pretty dicey. So I'm quite nimble on my feet, but it's not ideal. And you can't get down at half time easily for a wee, a coffee. It's like you are up there for the duration, so you better have sorted yourself out. It's an interesting experience.
Absolutely. Okay, well, we'll come back and talk to you a little bit more about that a little bit later on. But first, it's been a good news week for the Albion. And let's start with the game last Sunday at the Amex, where Graham Potter named an unchanged side for the second game running, which confused a lot of people. But it was absolutely wonderful to get that monkey off our back, wasn't it, Steve?
I do hate that phrase, especially when someone asked it of Hope Powell one time. I'm sure there's a better one, but yeah, I know what you mean. Yes, I mean, it's a statistical anomaly, frankly, that we hadn't won at home. It's because, you know, we had been winning away, albeit not that many, and we had been playing well. How many times have we had that on rinse and repeat in the Albion Raw, that we played well and not won at home? You know, when we could have beaten Sheffield United, could have beaten Fulham, could have beaten West Brom, could have blah, 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 could have beaten Man United, could have beaten Liverpool, and so on. For me, it was a statistical anomaly that I think people were using as a something to you know, to belt Graham Potter with. And I, you know, this is what I found so sort of fundamentally wrong. So to get that win, and let's face it, as a performance, as a general performance, it wasn't that massively different to the Fulham game. No. The difference being is that we scored. We played a top six side and it looks a lot better. But we, you know, the performance was every bit as good as that, with the exception of not actually scoring, Steve.
I totally agree. In fact, it was almost a mirror image. So remember the first half against Fulham and Trossard missed that big chance. It kind of opened up and he stuck it straight at the keeper. Mm-hmm. This time he swept it into the corner. I've got no doubt that if Trossard had scored against Fulham, we would have gone on to have won that game as well. Getting ahead was so, so important because we're now defending brilliantly, which is great to see with that solid back three of White, Duncan, Webster, and then Sanchez behind. You really feel that relationship growing, that bond growing. But getting ahead, getting that goal, they obviously got the confidence from that. And Spurs, I mean, slightly, let's be honest, a slightly fortunate time to play them without Kane. We were good, but they looked entirely toothless in attack, partly down to our great defending, but a large part of it, I think, down to the fact that they had absolutely no focal point and looked clueless going forward. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's actually start with that then, because, I mean, this is something that has been going on for a few weeks. Obviously, we've had this great one of late, four clean sheets in a row. You know, the foundations at the back have been well and truly set. I mean, the change of goalkeeper has helped that. I think that Bob Sanchez is just an absolute beast in goal at the moment.
Well, because he's not taller than 5 foot seven.
Well, I mean, basically, it just oozes confidence. And I think the defence can... I think particularly our problems we were having with set pieces earlier in the season, I mean, Everton being a classic example of that away, of keeper not coming out and claiming... I mean, we're going to talk about Liverpool later on, obviously. But, you know, that thing that where he came out at the end and just cleaned everyone out to claim the ball. And it was, you know, that is just, you know... And I was watching the defence and they were just so regimented.
But the criticisms that we'd had about defending set pieces weren't necessarily ones that you could level at blaming the keeper. Now let's pick an example. I'm sure that for every example I'm going to pick, your you know, one would cite another one. But let's look at the first Southampton goal against us, which was scored directly, you know, from a corner and a superb header. It was one that was actually belted out as far as, you know, the penalty spot, one which a goalkeeper Whether it was one of Matty Ryan's height, of Robert Sanchez's height, of Peter Crouch's height, or of Ramon Quiroga's height, reference to the 70s there, would not have stopped unless they'd started in the right place. So that
I'm not talking about height. I'm talking about dominating your area.
Yeah, but in that instance, yeah, but my point is that with that Southampton goal, that had nothing to do with
the goalkeeper. Oh, that was unstoppable. It was just the one. I mean, credit where credit's due. It was just an unstoppable header for Vestergaard.
That's not what you said at the time, mate.
Well, I don't know.
You're still grumbling, weren't you?
But I mean, I was probably still moaning about the penalty that wasn't a penalty that was given. But I mean, that Vestergaard header was just unstoppable, Steve.
It was. I mean, the changing keeper is really, really intriguing because I didn't expect it at all, to be honest. I think Ryan has been brilliant for us up until this season. And I think it was a bold call because he obviously had a dip in form. And there were some shots I think he would have saved in previous seasons. He would have been a bit more dominant. But you can't argue the fact it's almost an indescribable thing. You can't really point to statistics, I don't think. To sort of, well, maybe you can, maybe I just don't see them, but there's something about Sanchez coming in and, like you say, the height that he offers, but he is just, he's got that confidence, that almost that youthful effervescence where he's just like, I've come in, I've waited for this chance, I'm going to seize it. And it seems to have G'd up the whole back four and you can see they get one clean sheet and then it builds to the next. And it's great to see.
There's an interview on Seagulls Player this week, actually, with him where he's actually said exactly that. The fact that he's waiting for the chance and he's young. He hasn't had, I suppose he hasn't had the chance to make that many mistakes yet. I mean, I understand he made a couple at Rochdale. And he certainly did for the 23s. But, you know, he's growing in stature at the moment. But, you know, but the whole defence has been wonderful. And I was watching how regimented that line was against Spurs on Sunday. I mean, it was like, I should have been watching the other end of the pitch, really. But I was watching, but it was... They obviously knew what the threat of Spurs were, and they were going to try and hit them on the counter. And they were just solid line all.
But you've got that. I think the turning point that we could point to, and that's not to say that our season has definitely turned its corner. The turning point I think you could turn to is half time against Wolves, 3-1 down. Traore has got Dan Burn on toast. If you excuse my. Burning my fire references there. It's we were awful in that first half, even though we took the lead. And something happens where they got to realise, actually, this is not us. This is not good enough. We will do something about it. And since then, all right, the results haven't necessarily gone our way, but the performances have. That second half against Wolves was as good as any that we've had. So when we're talking about, the fact that the defence has sorted itself out, it by and large has. It's just the silly mistakes, which they are hopefully and looks like they're learning from. Now, the interesting point you was going to make about Sanchez was one that I've forgotten that I was going to make. So we'll just have to gloss over that one and move on to the next thing. But it was a really good point as well. But
I'm sure it was absolutely earth-shattering. But
it was.
But I mean, it was this game against Spurs. We were good in this game, and it was the second unchanged team from Potter in a row, which is unusual for him.
But the back three is usually fairly consistent, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, it was. But you know, he normally does pick the team for horses for courses. But it was a settled team. Alexis McAllister continued to completely dominate in that midfield. And he's just growing into himself. But the other player that I want to talk about as well is Pascal Gross, who's just completely re-emerged from the shadows pretty much.
Yeah, I was going to call out both of those players as well. Exactly that. Like McAllister getting a run of games, great to see. And he is... He's incredibly effective at, you know, it's the old cliche, playing between the lines. He just seems to pop up in space. And, you know, for the goal, that threaded pass through to Gross was magnificent, you know, because it opens up all of the space. But Pascal Gross has been, I've called it out in my commentary a few times this season, but it's like he's been reinvented, whether it's, you know, on the training ground, well, I'm sure it is on the training ground or something inside himself as well, but like he's reinvented himself almost as like a box to box midfielder, which I never thought he was capable of doing, because he was always out on the right wing, you know, doing his Cruyff turns, whipping in crosses, or kind of, you know, the attacking midfield role with very little defensive duty. Now he's tough tackling, he's threading passes, he's linking play. He's been brilliant. But the last two games particularly been brilliant.
To be fair, yeah, I mean, his passing has always been spot on. I mean, when we've actually sort of like given him a reference, it's always been about the fact that he's slow. You know, the gross turn is actually probably one of the slowest things known to nature. And yet, you know, he knows how to ping a pass. So it's not as though he stands around on the centre circle pinging out passes a la Glenn Hoddle. He does do that box-to-box work. But the nature of the way that Graham Potter's got it set up, I mean, the quality of the pass is key. Yes, he has to be there, but it's not as though he has to sprint everywhere. He's going to let everyone else do that. It's the quality of the pass, both from the passer and the recipient. And that is where we know Gross is actually a good player.
But I mean, his stats, like he's always had the really, really good running stats. He covers a lot of distance on the pitch, and he's done
slowly.
That since he, well, yeah, slowly. Yeah, like I mean, we say on the show on a regular basis, when he starts running, you expect the Baywatch music to start playing. But he's just become this. He's found his mojo again a little bit, I think. I mean, I think having a regular place in the team has probably helped that. I mean, players want to know they're playing. They want to build up that momentum of playing regular games, which I think I'm not going to criticize Potter for like looking at the team and picking it on a game by game basis, but you know, there's certain players that rely on having that match day rhythm, if you want, for a better phrase, and I think Pascal's one of those.
Steve,
I think Leandro Trossard is another one. So he's benefiting from a run of games, because he's someone that you look at and you think he promises so much. But there are certain games where he kind of flatters to deceive a little bit.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
You don't mind a player where he kind of flits in and out of games. If when he flits into games, it's absolute magic. But it hasn't always been the case. But he's benefited as well, because I thought he was excellent against Spurs again, and then even better against Liverpool. Because it's not just about the what he's doing when he's on the ball. His running is so intelligent, you know, creating space again down the left-hand side, causing problems all the time.
I mean, I, you're absolutely right about Leo there. I mean, we've been very critical of him on this show over the last few weeks.
Well, him and Mopay have been a terrible duo, haven't they?
Yeah, pretty much. But I mean, he against Spurs, he does kind of tend to flit in and out of games quite a lot. He has,
it's the decision making, AD. That's the issue that we have with him mostly.
He probably isn't necessarily there, but against Spurs, I think he actually managed to find that. I think he was magnificent. I mean, it was a tough call to call man of the match on it, but I gave it to Leo. I know Pascal.
You changed your mind in the end, though, didn't you?
Well, no, but to be honest, Pascal and Alexis were absolutely outstanding, but because of the fact that we have been so down on him, and he had actually showed, actually, hang on a minute, boys, this is what I can actually do. And he was popping up all over the place, and he was linking the play, and he was getting on the end of things. And of course, he actually got the goal.
Well, there's been a weather change, a sea change in the attitude, I think, to a hell of a lot of Brighton fans. I mean, we've stuck with Potter, or rather not actually debated the whole sort of thing of, you know, are the board looking at this? I mean, because I find that so ludicrous. But what I would say is that there is now a sea change in the attitude. We've had four games, not conceded a goal, still playing well. I haven't, to be honest, noticed a major improvement in the quality of the play. It's the results that are now coming. But each and every player is just doing their bit and making themselves look that little bit better.
I should point out, Al, that we can't necessarily just paper over the cracks completely, because the finishing, I mean, we're going to talk about the Liverpool game in a minute, but I just felt so sorry for Dan Byrne for those really, really gilt-edged chances fell to him. it literally was a rabbit in the headlights, or a gazelle in the headlights in his case. But Dan missing chances, he's not on his own there. And but we continue to create against Spurs, and McAllister, who is he's just shooting on sight at the moment, isn't he? And it's so, and him and Yves Bissouma as well, they seem to be given license by Graham Potter to get these shots away. I mean, there was one that McAllister, he fired on the shot, which used to deflect it for a corner, and Dunk's header from the resulting corner was headed off the line by Bale. But Spurs didn't get a shot away until 32 minutes.
Absolutely, yeah, I was loving it. I've actually quite a lot of my family, the one side are Spurs fans, so I knew it was a chance to wind them up, which is always great. so I was loving the prospect of that. But yeah, they were woeful, and you could just see, as I mentioned, that, like, once Trossard scored, Spurs weren't creating anything. We were defending really well, and I mean, you want the second. You want the second, obviously, to kill it off. We're talking about finishing. And there was that mad moment at the end with Aaron Connolly, the block on the line. But it's, really tough that we're not finishing games off as we should be, I think.
I want to talk about that Connolly miss in a second. But first, I just wanted to bring in what I written down here as the match-winning save by Rob Sanchez from Vinicius. Which was
good, but it's a save I expect not just him, but any keeper to make, because it was a nice, comfortable height. Yeah, all right, he saw it late, but it's not as though he had to fly, you know, halfway across the postcode to get it.
No, although I'd slightly disagree in that I feel that it's one of those where he'd had so little to do, and the turn and the shot was quite sharp. So you would expect, most keepers to make it, but I don't think every keeper in the Premier League would.
I mean, it came through a lot of bodies as well, right?
Yeah.
Maybe, but...
Yeah, no, still... I mean, it was an impressive save, and it kept the clean sheet.
It was up for the photographers anyway.
But, after the game, Graham Potter said that it was more 2-0 than 1-1, and it very nearly was 2-1, and that Connolly miss has caused a bit of an issue. I mean, personally, the way... It probably was easier to score, I would say, but you've got to give the defender an awful lot of credit there. In fact, I mean, I liken this to a conversation we had with Gordon Smith a little while ago, where he said he's still maintaining it was an absolutely brilliant save by Gordon Bailey. Gary Bailey.
No, I take your point, because the defender did move his legs very slightly to do it, and it was a reaction thing to do. And you want to credit, and as much as we're crediting Lewis Dunk with being on the line against Fulham, absolutely. The criticism that we'd had is that he should have scored, and that it probably was easy to score just because there was more goal to aim at. But I know the point you're coming to, Adi, is the social media online abuse that comes with it.
And the fact that he actually had to delete his account
as a result of it. Yeah, I cannot really fathom that. I mean, what... To actually criticise someone, normally he's criticised them as a footballer, and I'm sure that we've had word from the club in the past, and we've been doing this show for a long time, is that when we do criticise a club or the team or a given player, we like to do it in a way that the criticism is fair. Sometimes we step over the line, sometimes we don't, but the criticism we offer has merit, it holds water. And the criticism I'd offer Aaron Connolly is that yes, he probably should have scored. But anything above and beyond that has no value, has no meaning. Because it's one of those where you think, please, just for once, let us get away with that horrible miss. And we did. Okay, good. But even if we didn't, I mean, I shudder to think what would have happened in that case if Spurs had have equalised. And for the life of me, if you're going to support the club, you support everyone associated with it. But better still, even if you can't actually say something decent and you have to go to abuse, get in the sea.
I mean, Steve, I mean, this comes in a week. I mean, I personally didn't see any of the direct abuse that Aaron was getting after the game, and I don't want to see it, and there's no call for it. But this comes in a week where a lot of trolling and social media has come into the spotlight.
In a decade, mate, believe me, not just a week. Steve,
yeah, I know. It's just no call for it, is there?
Alan, I thought you hit the nail on the head there. There's just, like, football's about debate, and that to me is interesting. You know, like, fair criticism, constructive criticism, passionate criticism is all valid, but anything beyond that is appalling. Like, it's not. I mean, what I will say on the Connolly thing is that I maybe controversially, I genuinely, I mean, yes, it's a miss in a way, but I saw it more as an absolutely brilliant goal line clearance. Yeah. Like he didn't, it's not like he missed the target.
He didn't do an awful lot wrong, did he?
He didn't do an awful lot wrong. He got in the right position. He was really sharp when he came on. But I don't really see it as a miss. And I just think people get carried away. And because they're allowed to do it with anonymity for the most part on social media, it somehow sort of G's them up to think that their points are valid or they're able to do that. And it's appalling. And there's no place for it whatsoever. No place.
I'll just call the team or shut up.
Exactly.
Okay, we'll leave that there. You are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on the podcast. This show, as ever, is brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. And this is the bit where I normally get criticism for not being able to pronounce things in various different languages. But I think I might just get away with this one.
Somehow I still don't think so.
Let's have a look. So Steve, you've got the shirt there. Can you describe this for me and what you think it is?
Well, I loved it. It's an absolute belter. It's kind of from from the baggy shirt era, you know, but inexplicably they kind of made shirts that were like, no matter what the size, and I'm quite a slight individual, it felt like you were, you know, wearing a sail when you were playing football. You just catch the wind. It's kind of a tartan affair, blue, you know, like beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
Is it from the Charlatans era?
From the Charlatans era, from that. Well, you know what? I think it's 90s, definitely.
It is 90s.
Okay,
it is.
Go on.
So I, well, there's a coupon.
Can you actually physically describe it?
Physically describe it. So it's an incredibly baggy blue shirt, kind of like a royal blue shirt with a sort of almost like a tartan. I guess it is a tartan, so I'm guessing it's Scottish. And it's got like little yellow sort of squares detailed on it that are kind of, you know, symmetrical. Little yellow trim on the collar. And then the sponsor. Am I allowed to say the sponsor?
By all means.
Yep.
The famous grouse.
Well, that kind of gives it away that it might actually be Scottish, doesn't it?
Yes. that and the SPL on the sleeve.
Yeah.
That and the SPL on the sleeve. So that was the big clue.
Do you want to hazard a guess about who it is?
So initially, I kind of thought, okay, maybe it's like an away shirt for someone like Aberdeen. I had a vague memory that it might be an Aberdeen away shirt, but I'm going to take a total punt, and just pick a Scottish Premier League club and say St Johnstone.
You've absolutely nailed it.
Has it? Well done, sir.
That's a total guess as well.
I really thought you were going to say Stenhouse Muir then, but I don't, or Cowden Beath.
I was going to say Cowden Beath is just a good word to say. Blue, but... Oh, well played, Stephen. Well played.
Yeah. Oh, man, I'm chuffed
so
with
this
that.
So this is what Phil from oldfootballshirts.com has got to say about this. Here we go. Here's your shirt of the week. This is the 94-95 third shirt of Scottish Premiership side St Johnstone. They hail from the city of Perth and were formed in 1884 by the local cricket team to give themselves something to do in the winter. Their name is derived from the medieval name for Perth, St John's Tune. Their home ground is the McDiarmid Park, which was opened in 1989 with a capacity of 10,696. They're a bit of a yo-yo club and they swap between Scotland's top two divisions many times. They won promotions as champions to the second flight 8 times. They won the Scottish Cup in 2014 and the League Cup in 2007 and have had 7 European campaigns, the best being the third round of the UEFA Cup in 1972 when they beat Hamburg in round one. Their managerial history has had 21 Scottish managers, 3 Northern Irish managers, and well, that's it. The current squad is almost entirely Scottish with 3 English players and 1 from Northern Ireland. The most they've ever played for a player is 400,000 for Billy Dodds in 1994. And the highest transfer fee received was for Callum Davidson when he moved to Blackburn in 98. All-time Saints top goal scorer is John Brogan with 140 between 77 and 84. And the record appearances goes to Steven Anderson with 439 games. Another former player of note is Jason Scotland from Trinidad and Tobago, who's actually linked with us quite a lot for a few years, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. But Albion links, I give you their current midfielder is Craig Conway, who joined St. Johnstone at the beginning of the season. Craig spent a couple of months on loan from at the Albion from Cardiff in 2014, and he scored an absolutely brilliant goal. I can't remember who it was against. Was it Blackburn?
No, probably something like that. I can't remember.
But... No, it was against Leicester. The 3-1 win against Leicester.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a really, really great. But so thanks for that, Phil. Just before we move on.
Does St. Johnstone still hold that sort of unique record of that every quiz master wants to offer is they're still the only club in England and Scotland that have ever had the letter J in their name? I mean, I'm talking in terms of league clubs. Because I know that was a quiz question that went back to the 80s. I was just thinking, has that been updated since? And is it still right?
I was going to say answers on a postcard, but answers on a tweet to the Albion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, just before we move on, message board, Al.
Message board, yes. The Athletic, actually very, very good online magazine, which managed to poach Andy Naylor out of hiding 18 months ago. They are doing a series of quiz nights, one per club, between the beginning of February, so I think they've started already, into the middle of March. On Wednesday, March the 3rd, it is the Brighton and Hove Albion quiz night. It'll be on Zoom. You have to be registered with The Athletic, as in a subscriber and or a 30-day free trialist, in order to enter. But once you do, if you're a subscriber to The Athletic, just go to the page that talks about the quiz night. Register for Wednesday, March the 3rd. It's free to enter. If you're not a subscriber, then just go to theathletic.com/AlbionRaw and you can actually offer up your own 30-day trial. Now, bearing in mind that the quiz night is actually less than 30 days away, if you register from now on in, you will be able to enter on March the 3rd. The winner of the quiz night will go on to the grand final, and that person will win £1,000 in cash. Don't tell the tax man. And it will also be matched by a donation to Prostate Cancer UK. So if you want to take part, just go to The Athletic and register and sign up and join in.
Okay, let's move on to Wednesday night then. And we went to Anfield and we came home with the 3 points for the first time since 1982. And when... oh my God. Uwe Hoenemeyer will be delighted that the number one that the day we last won at Anfield was The Lion Sleeps Tonight. Or... if you want to know the last time we won at Anfield in at all in 1983, number one was Too Shy by Kajagoogoo. And I like to think I modelled my hairstyle on Lamal. But
the rubbish. Do you know, actually, I'm just thinking here. Do you realise in that case that the last time we won at Anfield was closer to the end of World War II than it was to today?
That's a stat that you use on every week.
I do it a lot, but it's absolutely true.
It's true. The game itself, there was two enforced changes for the Albion, with Byrne and Alzati coming in for the Crocked, Veltman and McAllister. And we also saw Solly March playing at right wing back, which was a bit... I mean, Jurgen Klopp couldn't quite work out what was going on there, because he actually said in his post-match that they kept on changing the game plan. They didn't know what to do with a lot of it.
Really?
It was a surprise to see that. But I mean, before we move on, obviously we want to wish Solly March a speedy recovery. It looks like it's a lot worse than I actually thought at the moment. Could possibly be out for the season. But we hope he will be back soon, because he's been massively important for us, Steve, this season, hasn't he?
He's been great, yeah. He's kind of, you know, made left wing back his own. I mean, there were even rumours of an England call-up, weren't there? Which may have been a little stretch, but he's certainly been in magnificent form. Some of his best that I've seen him for Albion. So he's going to be a big miss.
I don't think it's that stretched at all, to be honest, because we've got a dearth of left-sided players, and we've got 100 brilliant right backs, but no left backs really.
Yeah, Southgate doesn't play three at the back though, does he? So and as a left back,
I mean, he does play wing backs though. So
but as a left back, I think he's wasted. So if he's going to play as a wing back, then maybe. But yeah, listen, once someone, I mean, I remember the days when Darren Peacock playing for Newcastle got, you know, there was talk of him playing for England. So if as soon as someone, an English person, does quite well, and start talking about England call-ups. Listen, if we're going to do that, then I'd have a back... If Gareth Southgate was going to play back three trio, then I'd have Dunk, Webster and White all together because at least they know how to play. We've got a back five that's basically English, so, you know...
I said exactly the same to a friend of mine this week. You know, you want to play players in form, and I know it's still early days. They're kind of growing together as a three, but if they keep this form up all season, I mean, you've only really got John Stones at Man City, who's in good form. Like, why not pick them? They're great. Like Webster, particularly, is really coming into his own.
Well, I think Dunk's boat sailed, unfortunately. But Webster,
and there's the irony, isn't it? You've got, you know, people calling for White and for Webster to play for England, and they're not even the best players at their club. You know, not even the best English players at their club. You know, there is an element of madness. But actually, do you want to expand on your point about Webster? I know that we can talk about bits and pieces of the game, but I think that if you want to start with the man, you start at the end of the game with the man of the match there, Steve, because tell us about your view on the improvement of Adam Webster over the past season and a half.
Well, when he came in, I liked him straight away because I know a lot of fans were and kind of understand because Shane Duffy had been such a good servant for the club. Like, he'd been absolutely brilliant in the Chris Hughton era. But
and very, very popular with the fans as well.
Very popular, and rightly so, because he didn't do anything wrong. But in terms of changing the style of football, Webster's so important because he's very, very comfortable on the ball and he brings the ball out. You know, like when he gets up to full pace, he's actually quite scary because he almost looks unstoppable. He just charges through. But he's now got there were a few jitters in his defending, which I feel like he's ironing out now. So he's always had the ball playing ability. And yeah, he does misplace a pass, but I'd rather he does that than not attempt it. And now I genuinely feel that performance at Anfield in midweek was flawless. I could not pick out one thing he did wrong. I thought he was absolutely sensational.
And one thing, other thing, Steve, about Adam is the fact that, I mean, we've seen him in behind closed doors in empty stadiums. You get to realise just how incredibly vocal he is.
Yeah, exactly that. He's a leader. He is also, what I love about him, he's in the same mould as Shane Duffy and that kind of, you know, that famous Duffy Dunk centre-back that got Brighton up and sort of cemented our place in the Premier League. But he also is willing to put his body on the line. He's not one of those ball-playing defenders that doesn't want to tackle. He loves a tackle. He flies in. You know, he's still got the black eye from, I forget which game, where he got clattered. And he loves a battle, but he's great on the ball and you know, the tackle on Salah was the highlight for me. The absolute highlight of the game, because Salah is one of the best attackers in the Premier League. And it was, I said on my commentary as well, he had to get it right. He did. It was inch perfect. And he crunched into him. It summed up the whole game for me. Albion outfought Liverpool in every single department.
Absolutely. There was a clear game plan and it worked. And we just, I've got the turnovers, the second balls, absolutely... Everything was a notch above what Liverpool were doing, and you wouldn't realise who was the champions in that game.
Well, who was the high press? You know, we've high pressed the high pressing side, and played with a certain. And I did like the commentary. I was doing the commentary for Sky against Spurs, and I think you could actually say it for both the Liverpool and the Spurs games. Certainly, the Spurs games is that they use the word swagger, and I haven't heard the Albion being used in that sense when since Dave Beckett did the commentary for. The Withdean years and the last season at the Withdean, the Albion were playing with a swagger. Yeah, they were playing against Spurs with that kind of thing. And yeah, they had to be careful. They had to be, disciplined. And against both sides, who are, and as Brighton fans, you just know that a slip is coming or an awkward clearance or one that gets ballooned up rather than away. You know, one of those is coming and you sit there nervously. You know, the adrenaline turns brown. You can't do anything about it. You can't scream because shouting at the telly is a really silly thing to do. And yet they'll put you through the ringer. And then when you sort of finish the game, you thought, we were brilliant.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that stood out for me, and I'm not one of those commentators who's absolutely massive on stats or anything like that. And I'm not noting down tons of stuff as I commentate, like how many corners there've been and all that kind of stuff. But the one thing that was easy to see throughout the whole game, and I said it at the end as well, is that Robert Sanchez hasn't had a save to make. This is against the champions of England, a side that, okay, they're missing players, but they just turned over Spurs 3-1 away. They turned over West Ham, who are banging form 3-1 away, and Salah had got two. And then Albion turn up and don't give them a you know, Sanchez doesn't have a save to make. They nullified them. It was so impressive. And for me, I don't think I'm going overboard saying I genuinely think it's one of the performances of the season. Like, I really do.
Well,
like,
certainly is that.
Wonderful.
Certainly is that. I mean, it's I could argue it's probably one of the performances of since we came up. I mean, we were, you know, really lauding it in at the end of the first season when we beat Manchester United 1-0. I think it was the beginning of the second season we did it again. We beat them 3-2. And that really flattered Man U, thinking, great, these are brilliant performances. We then beat Arsenal, but you go to Anfield and you make them look inept, inert, limp. You know, no one does that, apart from they themselves bringing it upon themselves.
I mean, a lot of sides will go there and park the bus, and they don't score goals that start in your own half with 22 passes and end up in the back of the net. My missus is a Liverpool fan, and I was sat there and we were watching it. And like, I said, if this move ends up in the goal, that will be one of the goals, best goals I've ever seen. And it did. Yeah. And it was a great goal from El Zatard or Trossarte, whoever you want to call it.
How did you call it, Steve?
I went for El Zatard because it looked like on first glance clear. And then I did that classic that I started to question myself. Did you see the replay? It's like, has it come off Trossard's knee? And I think Trossard's been given the assist. Alzate's been given the goal. Trossard an assist for that.
And Byrne will be gutted.
He will be gutted.
What's Byrne has to do?
Yeah. Madness. But you're, AD, I think you're absolutely right. Like the way it was such an intelligent performance. And it kind of started with, it was reminiscent of the goal away at Leeds where they were so intelligent in when they chose to attack. It wasn't like all guns blazing, but I again said on my commentary they'd hinted that they were going to do that. It wasn't out the blue like a really lucky goal. Great.
Yeah, I mean, it started with a turnover from Bissouma, and it was like I'd need to double check the number of passes, but I'm pretty sure it is 22.
But
most of those were one touch, and it was just absolutely. I mean, it was just like liquid football.
Yeah,
we say it was 22 touches. Probably about a dozen of them would have been gross because he really. He just sort of slowed it down a little bit, and even then, March took about two or three touches. So. But it's the way, I think, more than that, it's the way that they got through the midfield. You know, it looked like Liverpool were going to close them down. And before you know it, we've gone round the outside of them, then we're attacking. Then it kind of, I wouldn't say it slowed down a bit, but it wasn't bang, bang, bang. I'll tell you what it wasn't. It wasn't the winner against Everton, which was, you know, five touches and bang, it's in the back of the net, albeit through an own goal. But it was fantastic. I'd still say arguably the Leeds goal was better. But, you know, that is kind of, you know, yeah, great, it went in. And we had other chances, not Gilles' chances. And I think that, you know...
I think some of them were. I mean, Dan Byrne, well, he's 6 yards out from a gaping goal.
He's got a defender in front of him.
And it falls to his swinger. And it is...
Yeah, but he's got a defender in front of him. He's got to do something with it. Admittedly, the one thing he didn't want to do with it was that. But you know, it's for me, it's not a
city. I mean, I could go through. I've got all the chances written down here. There's a litany of them. I mean, there's the Trossard one, which he could probably have taken over. There was one for Morpay, which he could have taken over. Another one for Morpay, who clearly can't head the ball at the moment. You know, I've got written down. I mean, it's a shame that like we have. I don't know if we're going to have time to talk about Glenn this week, but you know, it's. You know, there's a couple of those where, and there was a couple against Spurs as well. And you're thinking, Glenn would have had that in the back of the net. I mean, we need someone. If Glenn was still around, even not playing, you know, he could coach on that heading ability to the other strikers because that is something that is missing. Because there was a chance that Morpay had against Spurs that he should have buried, and you just couldn't. I guess
there's always a massive but with Glenn, and I'm not talking about his butt. I mean, I'm talking about the fact that in his build-up play, when he's back to the goal, his touch really isn't that great. I mean, Mopes still needs improving, but it's one thing being a 6-yard sniffer; it's another thing being part of that midfield slash forward line, because don't forget, when you're playing at Spurs, when you play against Spurs, when you're playing against Liverpool, you have to do an awful lot of defending. And Glenn is a line leader, and as much as we're going to belt the ball up to him, he might get it. But when it comes to the touch and the control, I still rather have someone with that level of pace and ingenuity. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm not criticizing Neil per se. I'm just saying his heading ability needs work.
Yes,
and
it does.
Glenn could teach him. But he's in Forest now, so that ship sailed.
Or maybe Dan Byrne could teach him.
For someone who's 8'9" when he's lying down, he's not very good in the air, to be honest.
No, he's okay. But Steve, I mean, for all the fact that, you know, sort of 20 minutes ago, AD was taking the mick out of Dan Byrne, that was probably one of his better games, wasn't it?
Without a shadow of a doubt, I think it's one of his very best games in an Albion shirt. And credit to him, because, you know, that half against Wolves was really, really difficult. Really, really difficult for him. And I think I saw what Graham Potter said about him this week. You know, Dan Byrne gets criticism, but he sees what Dan Byrne can provide in training and in games. His attitude is clearly spot on. And I was chuffed for him, because he got up and down that left side really effectively. He kept popping up in the box. He's going to be a
heat map
player.
Was insane.
Yeah. The energy he brings was impressive. And he's going to be, with Solly March missing, he's going to be a really, really big player for the remainder of the season in that left wing back spot.
When it came to Byrne versus Salah, to be fair, it did terrify me, but, you know, actually Byrne, I wouldn't say he had Salah in his pocket, but, you know, Salah was quiet. But I'm still hopeful. I mean, Veltman hopefully is going to be okay, in which case we'll probably have our first choice back five. But that's another matter entirely.
Okay. But I mean, it was that we mentioned this earlier in the show, that claim by Rob Sanchez at the end, you know, it's just, you know, the corner last minute of the game, the last chance, and you've got this guy who just comes flying through like Superman to claim the ball, and like, yeah, thou shall not pass. It's just absolutely, you know, it was wonderful. It was a great win, and it's one that I'm sure we'll be talking about for ages. But it would have
been. I love the way he wiped out most of his defense for it.
Yeah, but it's just, you know what, though? It's just one of those where, you know, that journey home from Liverpool would have been absolutely joyous. And
talking of which, Steve, you were obviously there and you'd have had your journey home, and obviously you're going to be making way up to Burnley this weekend. So with that in mind, give us a flavour of a day in the life of a football commentator.
It's an excellent question. So I don't actually, for the away games, I do what's called an off-tube commentary. So I don't go up to the, particularly at the moment, I didn't go to Liverpool. So it's all kind of so the away games are on a screen. And that's at the Amex. And then I record it, sort of like viewing it on the TV, basically, which is a little trickier than watching
Is it just a one screen or is it a multi-screen thing?
It's a one screen thing. So I get the exact feed that is, you know, that would be on, I guess, Match of the Day, BT or whatever. It's I believe it's bought by the club and then they...
It's the Premier League feed. So it's the feed
Premier League, PLP world, Productions. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. So, that's how the club do it to get the highlights out to the fans. The home games, pre-pandemic, like actually a beautifully social experience, because, you know, I get to go into the press area, have a nice meal, chat to some fellow commentators, journalists pre-game and kind of finalise my notes, things like that, which I usually start a couple of days before. And then I'll kind of potter quite, you know, quite gently up to my position and, you know, chat to some fans and all of that. Pandemic times, or sort of post lockdown, it's very much less a social experience. So it's kind of, you know, get your equipment, you minimize contact with people, obviously. So it's literally get your equipment, go up, and I'm there about an hour and a half before to test the equipment, make sure it all works. Then I get the teams in, so then I'll make my final notes to do the team news, and then it's kind of straight into the game. So
you told us something off air a minute ago. What do you test your mic with?
So I get asked, and it's the weirdest thing in without fans in the stadium to soak up the noise. But I basically get asked to sort of do, you know, as I would commentate on a goal, because they need to check that level isn't peaking or distorting in any way. So in a completely empty stadium, surrounded by, you know, national news journalists and other commentators, I am kind of screaming into the microphone various players. You know, often it's McAllister, because that's the, weirdly, when I say McAllister, when he scored the goal at Palace, I went absolutely wild. And it was like, wow, it almost distorted because you went so crazy. And it's something about the word McAllister or the name McAllister. So I get to do that. So I'm just screaming McAllister. And I've got, you know, I've had sort of Henry Winter from the Telegraph looking up at me like, what is this guy doing an hour before kickoff? Screaming McAllister. So it's the, about the most self-conscious I feel as a commentator, to be honest.
Well, does Johnny Cantor have to put up with this nonsense? Because I know he's got the grumpiest man in the world next to him, but even so, you know, I guess to sort of test the microphones, he's got, you know, sort of stuff he has to do. But yours is very much a sort of kind of solo project, isn't it?
That's it. So I don't have anyone with me. I have done it before with I had one game with Steve Sidwell a couple of seasons ago. So I did have a co-commentator when he was looking to get into media work, and he was an absolute pleasure to work with. But otherwise,
you had Liam Rossini as well, didn't you?
Yes, yeah, so Liam Rossini as well. Yeah. So I had a couple, and then I did some with Bob Booker and one or two with Guy Butters, but otherwise it's completely solo. So and I also don't get there, like Johnny Cantor has, you know, the show to present, so he gets there a bit before, whereas I'm, you know, especially now it's quite tight on time, so I get there and it's equipment, it's set up, and it's straight into it, and then afterwards it's like pack up and go. So there's less of a obviously less of a social thing now. Yeah, it's very, very sort of solo.
So when it comes to doing the presentation for my Albion TV, is it a case of you're doing the commentary, but the footage will be taken by the editing team at the ground and then put in your commentary to go with it?
Yeah, so I record the whole game. Obviously, I commentate on the whole 90 minutes. It almost works, I guess, exactly as Match of the Day would work. So like a Guy Mowbray or Steve Wilson would be there, commentate, and then they chunk it up. So they take the footage and then take the best bits of it, and then they'll do a cut for, you know, like a minute for social media or a couple of minutes for social media or the website, then the extended highlights. So they'll cut it up in whichever way, but it's never seen as a full game. Do you know what I mean? It's never seen as a 90-minute game. It's purely for the highlights.
I mean, that's not strictly true, though, is it? I mean, I often say that I'm going to watch two games this weekend. I'm going to watch Brighton v whoever we're playing, and then I'm going to watch Brighton whoever we're playing on Match of the Day. It's two completely different games, usually.
Yeah.
It just, because it gets so heavily edited in the favour of whatever team we're playing against. So,
no, obviously, I know you've done this job for quite a while, Steve, but I do have to do this. Maybe you might have to sit back. I want to ask for a Phoenix from the Flames here. Now, there was a game about 2 years ago, maybe three, I lose track. We'd had a defender sent off for an unnecessary red card, of which we then immediately scored a second goal. But the third goal, that's the one I want to talk about. I think it was Bernardo booted the ball up the field, and the Florian Andoni gave chase. Your commentary was excited, to say the least.
Yeah. I the thing is, I really am that excitable about football and about the Albion. Like, it's not an affectation. So I'm very much, because one of the absolute most beautiful things about doing it for my Albion TV is that I can be slightly partisan. You know, I'm not there as like a Match of the Day commentator, sort of. I love Brighton. I really want them to win, and it's for Albion fans, right? So I want to get that across. I want to almost be as excited as they would be in the moment. And I felt that with the Andoni goal, with the McAllister goal early this season. I really get that into it, and genuinely some of the feedback I get from the production team is kind of, you know, that is great. We want you to feel that. It's just making, because I've got quite a high voice, so I need to, I need to make sure I don't do that as much.
That's a great place to finish there, because that's all we've got time for on this week's show. So thank you to Steve Baker, to Alan Wares. I've been Ailey Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com on DAB, and of course on a podcast and in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Bye.